thank you from my heart, from the bottom of my heart. Thank you from my heart, from the bottom of my heart.
Our brains try to keep us alive in a complex, uncertain world, and they, you know, will often create erroneous connections between things and decide things are important which aren't necessarily important. But that is what brains do and can do. So it's not necessarily a problem that, I'm having thoughts like that. So instead, I use my practices. And so that's, you definitely talk about how gratitude is a practice. It's not something that is just on or off. Instead, it's something that we can inhabit through our habits. And so for me, that is going out into nature and just coming into the body, coming into the present moment. Because in the present moment, none of those goals really matter, because I'm just here, you know, with my body and being grateful for this moment that I'm inhabiting. And then that just creates that contrast that we were talking about earlier, that perspective on those earlier thoughts. It's like, well, okay, does that really matter? No, it doesn't matter. And you know, there's so much that I can be grateful for.
Welcome to the Gratitude Podcast on www.georgeandbenta.com, where you'll hear a new story each week that will inspire more gratitude in your own life. Our mission is to inspire 100,000 people to discover how to feel gratitude and live a happy life through the amazing life stories of our successful guests and their actionable tips. And now, the host of our podcast, Georgian Benta.
Hi, Gratitude Seeker. Welcome to a new episode of the Gratitude Podcast. I'm really excited about this interview because it's with a really special person that inspires me. And he has done something amazing in this period when we were all in lockdown and in dealing with the pandemic. He was brave enough to go to China, which I think it's, oh my God. And he also managed to create a film. It's called Journey to the East. And I've watched it. It's really, really interesting, really deep, and really beautiful. But I will let our guest tell you more about his story and also, of course, about this film. Welcome, George Thompson, to the Gratitude Podcast.
Thank you so much, Georgian. It's a pleasure to be here. I have been listening over the last year, and I just think it's a beautiful space that you've created, and really excited to get deeper into gratitude. And I've been studying for the last 4 years the philosophy of Taoism. People may know the yin yang, which is kind of the most famous symbol from Taoist philosophy, which comes from ancient China. And it comes up with loads of ideas from this very long time ago that can help us with our gratitude practice and our mental, physical, and spiritual health more generally. So, excited to explore more with you. I've just released my film, which is my first 55-minute film. I run a YouTube channel exploring Taoism and Tai Chi, and is kind of from my perspective as a young person trying to work out this complex world that we all share and inhabit, and the sort of things that have helped me on my journey. And Journey to the East is, the kind of my first big film that I've been working with, you know, an editor and musicians, and making it a proper documentary quality film for free on YouTube. And that was released 2 days ago, and I've got something like 15,000 views already, and people are loving it. After this podcast is done, if people are interested, type in on YouTube Journey to the East, and you can check that out. And I guess I've been exploring this philosophy called Taoism, and my journey started with a mental health crisis after finishing the kind of the formal constraints of education and university. I entered into the big bad world and deeply fell into anxiety and confusion, not really knowing what I was doing with my life, and having a very bad ability to take anything, be grateful for anything. My perspective was just stuck on just this here moment now of me feeling really bad, and I thought that's how I would be forever. And yeah, I can talk more about it, but it's been a journey of exploration and self-inquiry that has helped me find a way that I can be kinder to myself. And certainly gratitude is something that's really important. So I absolutely love your project, Georgian, and the things that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you very much. The feeling is mutual, and I like to think about your film and the things that you shared there, a journey of initiation somehow, and I think it's something wonderful that that you are brave enough to go on this journey, and we didn't speak about this part, but I think it would be very interesting for you to share that you actually went into the mountains. You didn't go like in civilization, and you went there and you studied with a spiritual master, right?
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So there's a beautiful place in the middle of China called the Wudang Mountains. And it's one of the few surviving Taoist communities that live in industrialized communist China. And yeah, it's a very, very special place. It's supposedly the origin of Tai Chi, which is this moving meditation, a beautiful practice to help you come into the present moment, learn about your body intelligence. And you know, you naturally have a sense of gratitude once you kind of get out of your thinking mind and into your body. So that's a very special practice. And Wudang is, yeah, it's a crazy collection of temples right on top of the highest point of the Wudang mountain range. And for thousands of years, Taoist cultivators have been there working with energy practices like Tai Chi and Qigong and developing philosophies. There's monasteries, there's hermits living in caves, there's an abundance of wild animals. So every walk I'd go on, I'd meet a new species, another non-human consciousness, which, you know, my life growing up in the city, I was so deprived of any sort of in-person experience of the other manifestations of the laws of nature and the intelligence on our planet. So yeah, the Taoists, they have this beautiful philosophy which places humanity as one part of the world, rather than being parachuted in from somewhere else by some external power. Instead, they believe that we come out of the world like an apple comes out of an apple tree. This is a world that peoples. And when you go to these sort of mountains, and even in modern China, which is, you know, a complex country as compared to how it's portrayed, you know, on the news, and you know, we've all got these international conflicts and tensions between different states, but there's, you know, an awful lot of old culture that is just about surviving, despite the government in the 60s and 70s almost destroying its own immensely rich heritage with the Cultural Revolution. But yeah, you get a very interesting perspective on the world, because yeah, you're surrounded by amazing non-human consciousnesses. You're on the mountains, which supposedly in Chinese culture have a healing energy, which is often why lots of spiritual leaders retreated to mountains for cultivation and then came back to the city. Supposedly, you know, you're physically closer to the heavens, and so that kind of mystical connection with the heavens is stronger, according to the Taoists. And yeah, it's been going. Getting there through coronavirus was a very interesting time, because I set off when it was still the China virus, and it was just Wuhan had this thing and needed to sort out. And I had absolutely no idea that my hometown would be locked down and it would turn into a global pandemic. My kind of, in my ignorance, it was, well, I'll go out. I've already booked everything. My master's on this Tai Chi mountain where there's nobody there, there's no coronavirus, it'll be safe if I get there. And then, you know, that set off a series of a long adventure, which is captured in the film, of taking the train across the Eurasian continent through Russia and Siberia, and then getting locked down for 2.5 months in Shanghai, and then other run-ins with SWAT police, and eventually arriving on the mountain.
That's amazing. And one of the, so there are several things here that I appreciate very much, and I think that make you a grateful person. So first, I am a bit more selfish in my travels. Like I love to be there just for me. I don't to do the work of filming and taking pictures for other people. I just like to enjoy the travel itself. And I know that when you are creating a documentary, when you are doing something of this nature, like a YouTube channel, you also work there, basically, even on the road. And I admire that very much. And I know that there are many situations in which it's really hard to film. It's really hard to speak with the people that you're going to speak through the film, through the lens. And I think it's something amazing that you took of your time, of your pleasure of traveling to share that with us. And I really appreciate that. Firstly, and secondly, I think the fact that you took the train, and I love how you mentioned that in the film, that to better appreciate the vastity of this world and all of its beauty. And so this works actually perfectly for what gratitude is. It's just about the destination where we want to get in life, all of the goals that we want to achieve, but actually appreciating the road there. So I think it's a really beautiful metaphor for gratitude as well. And I think it's amazing that you did that. I'm sure it would have been much easier to just go by plane.
Yes.
And I think this is really great for our conversation. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, you raise interesting points. I mean, my life as a YouTuber, there is the risk that you don't know what's you and you don't know what's, the life for filming, because, I am filming my own life. I definitely take some balance as opposed to, like vloggers. So I still try and see, my films as philosophy, but seen through my perspective and the things that happened to me in my life. I think that there's an interesting kind of conflict in Taoism as a philosophy about travel, because the Tao Te Ching, which some of the listeners may know about, is the kind of the foundational text of Taoism. It's also spelled the Tao Te Ching, lots of different spellings. And that is, the kind of the distillation of the oral wisdom of Taoism, because this is, a wisdom that dated back, prehistoric wisdom of people living in the forests. And then the Tao Te Ching was the kind of the accumulation of all this wisdom written down into a very short book, only 81 very short chapters, each chapter like a poem, often only a few lines long. And one of the chapters, Lao Tzu, who's the supposed author of the Tao Te Ching, says that the further one goes, the less they know. You don't have to travel very far to understand the universe, because if you did, you're externalizing the understanding as something that's out there rather than in here. But there's also a great canon of Taoist explorers. And I would certainly say that, and I'm sure you've experienced this as well, it's like when you get out of your own culture, you get offered different ways of looking at the world. And then when you come back, you realize that what you assumed was truth and assumed was this is really how the world actually works is just the kind of the cultural understanding of your society. And not to say that that's necessarily a bad thing, we all have to have collective stories, but when you step out of that comfort zone, I do think that it's a very nourishing experience, because you connect with people who are not like yourself, and you see people living other ways of life. And so, yeah, certainly I think that, you know, if we can make it in a responsible way, that traveling is something that can help us have perspective. And I'm sure that your listeners, you know, they may go on silent meditation retreats, or they may go on, you know, yoga classes or Tai Chi classes, like those sort of things where you step out your everyday can be very instructive. And I'm sure you found that. And I think it's beautiful that when you take that time for yourself, Georgian, that you don't live vicariously through the screens that fill so much of our waking hours in normal life, and instead you're just present wherever you are and enjoying it. And certainly I'm going to Scotland next week for some recharging and to go into the wilderness, and I'm not going to bring my laptop, which is a big deal for me. And I'm sure you'll have similar experiences when you work for yourself. And to not bring your laptop is something I need to do. The journey. So I took the train, and, you know, there's kind of the environmental impact of the train is 25 times slower. Taking the train from London to Beijing takes 14 days if you were to do it in one go. So it's an awful long way. It's like 12,000 kilometers. Now, that is still 10 times less carbon emissions than just flying for 10 hours. So, you know, the amount of carbon that is burnt in flying is an awful lot. So that was one motivation. But then secondly, it's like, yeah, in the film I talk about, you know, you sit on, what do you get when you take a flight? You have a bad ready meal, you have a snooze, you watch a low-res film, and you arrive. Whereas on the train, you know, you really are sitting as the world changes around you, and you get off, and the Russian trains are very fun because every kind of 6 hours or so, they'll stop for an hour at a city, and everyone gets off and, you know, walks around, and there's people selling stuff, and you have this kind of festival atmosphere, and then everyone gets back on the train to continue. And so you get more of a sense of how the cultures changes and the ethnicities. You know, Russia is an incredibly diverse place that, you know, I was completely ignorant to. Then Siberia, which is this, you kind of, again, in my ignorance, imagined the gulags and places that the communists sent people to be punished. And then I found Siberia to be, you know, incredibly beautiful, full of warm, you know, generous people, despite the cold. It's all just learning, basically. And the Taoist philosophy is quite a universal one. So, you know, there's no idea that they are the chosen people in this country and then they're going to hell. You know, those people on those islands that haven't read the good news, they're also going to hell. Like, there's none of that. The Taoists have this kind of idea of the mystery. Now, you know, the world is too complicated to be able to intellectualize with our brains and limited thinking power. And the idea that there's some people who are the children of God and then others aren't just doesn't make much sense. It's too much of a big statement. And so that was really confirmed to me as I, you know, just was again and again struck by the generosity of people from all around the world.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And the reason why I felt very drawn to you and to your story is the fact that even though I haven't gone to a secluded place to learn from a spiritual master, I'm doing my own exploration here on the podcast, speaking with people from all walks of life and from different religions and cultures. Yes. And I'm always looking for those things that we have in common as humans. And of course, this what you just mentioned is the baseline, let's say, that we are all loved, we are all important. It's not that some of us from a certain religion are better than others or anything. Based on this, I was, and I still am, always looking for those things that we have in common in the spiritual practices that we have, and also in us as humans. And for me, gratitude and love was something that I found in every spiritual culture that I've studied one way or another, or the people that I've talked to that were from a certain spiritual practice. And I wanted to get back to Siberia a little bit.
Yes.
And that's where I got one of the ideas that I would like us to explore more about contrast. I saw you swimming in the frozen water in Siberia, and I thought, oh my God, that's amazing to be able to overcome the fear of cold and to run, firstly, to run in the freezing temperatures without many clothes on you, and also to swim in that freezing water, I think,
yes,
is something quite amazing. And I wanted to ask you about the experience, because in my experience with gratitude, for instance, if I sit too much in my house, which is beautiful, I love and appreciate, at one point I just don't realize how amazing it is. And for instance, when I go out, if it's really cold and I get back in, it's like, oh my God, it's so good to be home.
Yes.
And I was curious about your experience with this, with contrast. And that was a really powerful contrast.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, that is, I think, such an interesting area of exploration for gratitude in general, because, you know, I talk about, let's talk about the yin yang, because again, this is one of the key concepts in Taoism. So people will know what the yin yang looks like, and you know, so you've got the black bit and the white bit, and that's a pair of opposites. The black is yin, the white is yang. If you think about a white tooth, a fang, you now know that the yang is the fang, and so the yang is the white part. So that's how you remember the colors. And yeah, the diagram is trying to show the relationship between opposites and the idea that you can't really have one without the other. They need each other. So you can't have an idea of what on is without off, unless you hold your breath forever. An inhale comes with an exhale. You can't have one without the other. I kind of even imagined, like, say humanity sorts out its biggest problems, and we do create this utopia that I think is eminently possible for us. But I imagine even in that future world, humanity will have something to complain about, like the abundant bread machine is overcooking the bread. You know, that would be the complaints, in this world where we've literally made a machine that makes unlimited bread, and we can still complain about it. So. Yeah, I think contrast is such an important thing, because it gives you the relative baseline. You know, like a warm shower for so many people in the world is an absolute privilege, like something that they've never had. If we actually go and experience the lives that still many people are living, like suddenly coming back and having a warm shower is a privilege. And coming back to Britain, after being in Siberia, totally changed my view on the weather. And Britain, some of your listeners may know, is famous for complaining about the weather. It's one of our things that we talk about because it changes so much. It rains a lot and it's often grey. But, you know, it took me 10 days by train to get to Siberia. And where I was in Siberia, the average winter temperature is minus 25 degrees. I was on a frozen lake. And the lake is so frozen that it's, you know, meter and a half thick ice. It's so thick that they have like a motorway on the ice over this lake. It's this crazy land of ice. Make lemons out of lemonade. There's groups that go swimming in the frozen lake. So they have a chainsaw. They chainsaw the ice through the ice, create a little swimming pool. And then, you know, people go for a dip. And the much needed antidote is a sauna. So you do warm up in the sauna before going into the water. But yeah, so going in and, you know, like having your breath completely taken away, and you start panicking, and but eventually you do acclimatize, and there's people who can do it for 5-10 minutes. I did it for maybe one or two. But yeah, I was really taught about the resilience of our bodies. Like, we have immense capacities that we don't really ever engage or appreciate about ourselves. And I imagine, you know, supposedly Homo sapiens, we first evolved in the African savanna in this warm, amazing climate with all these, you know, large game animals. And then over time, we dispersed throughout the whole planet to places like Siberia and the Inuits in Alaska and, you know, immense cold. And I asked the locals there, and actually a shaman who's been on the islands on this frozen lake for, you know, as part of a shamanic lineage dating back hundreds of years. And so that shaman has a direct connection with the ancestors, and he can like go and sort out if there's a kind of a bad spiritual energy in someone's house. You know, they call the shaman, and that sort of activity has been done for a very long time. Now, I asked him, if you could go back to the African savannah, to the warmth, would you go? And he said, no, you know, I don't think I would have lived as long if I wasn't in this cold. The cold is, I'm very comfortable here, and it's part of my way of life. And so come back to Britain when it's now, you know, it was 8 degrees and rainy and everyone else is complaining. I'm suddenly counting my blessings because it's, you know, it's not literally minus 25 degrees. And so, yeah, I think you're very much onto something, like the contrast. And I think that's, again, one of these benefits of stepping outside of your normal comfort zone. But I also think that, you know, the journey that we're all on means that, you know, the people listening here, like you are all explorers and curious about yourselves and how you work and how the world works. And Georgian, you know, same for you and same for me. And these sort of insights and the idea of contrast doesn't have to be reserved for far away and jumping into Siberian ice. Like, we can, you know, actually, if we pay conscious attention to these kind of interplays, the yin-yang rhythms between, you know, good and bad and hard and easy, we will notice that there is a rhythm and there is a contrast, and, you know, nothing lasts forever, no storm lasts forever. But if we are aware of those contrasts, then that means that we know that, you know, the good times will come again, and we can be more conscious of and more inquisitive about what's going on in this given moment. There's always, if our focus is on just good and bad in our normal understanding, with some conscious attention, we can widen that to different kind of extremes of how things could be. And so again, these sort of practices can help ground us in just acceptance, is ultimately what the Taoists talk about, is that, you know, well, there's a fantastic story kind of summarizing, maybe a bit unfairly to the other religions, summarizing the three main religions in China, which is Taoism, Confucianism, and Buddhism. And it's called the Three Vinegar Tasters. And there's three men all around a big vat of vinegar. And the three men represent the three religions. So you've got Confucius, you've got the Buddha, and you've got Lao Tzu, who wrote the Tao Te Ching. And so they all go to taste this vinegar, and Confucius, he takes a ladle, sips it, and he's got a grimace on his face because the vinegar is very bad tasting. It's horrible to drink. And this is a metaphor for life in general, which is full of degenerate people. And we all have to, you know, follow strict rules and rituals in order to become good human beings and for society to be orderly. Then Buddha takes a sip, and he's trying to meditate out of the bad taste. So he just has this kind of grimace on his face because life is suffering and he wants to, you know, not be taken in by the cycles of pain and just try and meditate his way to nirvana. An unfair summary, but, you know, this is a Taoist story. And then we've got Lao Tzu, who takes a sip of the vinegar and he's got a smile on his face. And you wonder, how could a man have a smile on his face when drinking such a horrible and intense tasting vinegar? And that's because Lao Tzu believes that, well, this is the nature of the vinegar. This is what it is. So there's nothing to be, you know, frowning about. You know, accept the vinegar as it is, and actually you can be grateful for it and appreciate it, and then move from there. And this sort of approach to life makes it's not like a pliant, it's not a weak way of being where you just accept everything. Instead, the acceptance is the starting point. You know, this is what the world is offering me right now. This is how the world is. And you know, that isn't something I need to fight, because then that just creates unnecessary waste energy of trying to fight the world as it is. But instead, we really see clearly how the world works. And then this allows us to flow more easily back into balance, back into the more positive times of our life. And an example of this is, you know, with my anxiety, is that I, you know, when I had my kind of mental health breakdown, I was thinking, well, you know, this is it now. This is me forever. Like, I feel hopeless and I will always feel this way. And I kind of tried to fight it. And I created this big story about, you know, my feeling right now is now part of my identity and part of who I am and part of who I always will be, versus accepting, okay, I am anxious right now and that's okay. And you know, I can just sit with it. I can go for a walk. I can do some Tai Chi, you know, whatever people's practices are. And then inevitably, you know, I find the next day that, you know, even if I'm a little bit anxious, if I've slept well, I'll be feeling better. And it didn't need that big story around it. Instead, you know, just this is where I am right now. It's a really liberating way of dealing with our emotions.
Totally. And it's actually empowering. I found this very interesting in my experience as well. Instead of fighting with these things that aren't even within our control, actually,
yes.
Acceptance gives us the power to react and to choose a perspective that's much better for us. And it's really empowering, at least in my experience. It's really yes. empowering when you get to that feeling of acceptance. You can, like you said, you can flow with how things are going. And this is one of the things that I think are pretty challenging nowadays with this whole idea of setting goals and achieving them. Sometimes it's not their time to be achieved, you know, even if we mm-hmm. have a deadline, if we set a goal for, I don't know, this time, next month or something like this, and we really, really want to achieve it, and we exaggerate in many ways to make sure that we achieve it. I think sometimes it's best that we accept the rhythm of things. And when we do, even though we might not achieve the things that we want at a certain date, but we might achieve something better, even more important, and that's peace of mind and peace of heart, and
yes,
enjoying the journey and not just be clenched and I don't know, to work harder than we're supposed to, when we can listen to that flow, to that inner will, inbuilt wisdom that I want us to talk a little bit about as well,
yes.
and just go with the flow and appreciate the journey, because the journey is actually the life that we're living. It's not just about achieving that particular goal. And I also want us to talk about the release of the film. I love what you said before us going live about how it is when you release something that you worked on for so many months.
Yes. I'll give a metaphor from Tai Chi before getting into that and how I've been navigating my own expectations and goals. One kind of principle of Tai Chi is that you're upright and relaxed. And the idea is that, you know, so if you imagine that you are kind of pushing forwards, Tai Chi is a martial art slowed down. It has martial origins, but it is a moving meditation. But it's kind of a series of moves that you flow through, and you kind of imagine that there could be attackers coming from different directions. And so, yeah, one of the key principles is being upright, because if you were leaning forward because you imagined that your opponent was right in front of you, and then suddenly there's an opponent from behind, you're going to tumble over because you had a pre-determined idea of where that attack was going to come from. And so then you lean forward, and then someone hits you from behind, and you're unbalanced and you fall forward. So instead, Tai Chi instructs you to live from your center. And so you are upright. And so that means that even if you have some idea of where you're going, that if you get hit from different directions, then you can be flexible and you can adapt and return back to the present. And so, I think there's kind of, for my work, that there's two types of goals generally. There's kind of like the outcome goals, where like I want to lose this much weight by this date, or, you know, I want to be good enough at this thing by this date. As you said, you know, it's very hard to control the outcomes for those sort of goals. You know, we can't control what thoughts come into our head, let alone what other people do, let alone, you know, what actually life gives us in that time. And so, yeah, the journey is so important. And one of the most famous lines from Taoism is, a journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, or a journey of 1,000 miles starts beneath your feet. And so it's this idea that every day, that journey starts again, and it is ultimately completed by taking that step, but it is that accumulation of single steps. And so another metaphor is that Taoism talks about the pathless path. So we're all on the way of life, and there isn't a motorway that we all have to join and then copy each other. No, we are all, you know, truly unique. You know, nobody will have the same voice as you, the same fingerprints as you, the same story as you. You know, we are truly, truly unique manifestations of the intelligence of this world. And so when we kind of narrow down our potentialities through just, you know, having an explicit goal in some abstract date in the future, then that prevents us from actually potentially taking opportunities, as you said, which can actually be more nourishing for us. And often it's like having the blinkers on. You know, horses wear those, police horses wear those things called blinkers, which prevent them from seeing behind them, so they can just focus on what's ahead of them. And so that's what happens to us with goals as well. It's that we actually miss out on so much amazing stuff that is around us, because, you know, we're just, our intention is on one thing. And so we don't stop to smell the roses. And that, I've had to practice my gratitude practice after releasing this film, because, yeah, it's been 6 months of work and so much love and time and bringing lots of different creatives together has gone into this process. And then inevitably you release it. And then the problem with YouTube algorithms is that you have a very explicit metric for success, when you know that the success of the film doesn't depend on the numbers, and you know that it is, you know, that unique creative expression is the important thing and people are loving it from all around the world. But in a sort of YouTube sense, the algorithm still hasn't picked it up, which I don't think is a problem at this point anyway. But, you know, there's the little voice in my head that then begins to give me some worry about that, which I call that voice in my head the underminer, the voice in my head that brings me down and gives me pain. And I've tried to learn to cohabit with the underminer. It's not that I shouldn't have thoughts like that, because, you know, our brains, they try to keep us alive in a complex, uncertain world, and they, you know, will often create erroneous connections between things and decide things are important which aren't necessarily important. But that is what brains do and can do. So it's not necessarily a problem that, I'm having thoughts like that. So instead I use my practices. And so that's, you definitely talk about how gratitude is a practice. It's not something that is just on or off. Instead it's something that we, can inhabit through our habits. And so for me, that is going out into nature and just coming into the body, coming into the present moment. Because in the present moment, none of those goals really matter. because I'm just here, you know, with my body and being grateful for this moment that I'm inhabiting. And then that just creates that contrast that we were talking about earlier, that perspective on those earlier thoughts. It's like, well, okay, does that really matter? No, it doesn't matter. And you know, there's so much that I can be grateful for. So yeah, you know, it continues to be a practice, which I think is an important thing to remember, is that we will always kind of fall out of consciousness, and it's that's okay, and it's definitely part of the process.
Yeah, definitely. And the beautiful part about this and about practices like gratitude is the fact that when we're able to do them, and we're able to actually experience them, the goals, the things that we wish for, actually come to us more easily and more naturally. And yes, it's so interesting that it's very counterintuitive that we think, okay, we must do things, or we must worry, because if we worry, we can somehow make it happen more easily, when in fact it's about accepting and detaching and feeling grateful for the whole picture, which I think it's very powerful. And I left when you talked about the underminer, because I love how you animated it. And yes. I think
an evil wizard.
Yeah, it's very funny, and we can all relate, because we all have that underminer. And yes, it's really something that the way you depicted it, it makes you laugh, and
yes,
it makes it easier to be accepted. This is
yes,
actually the thing that I love most about it. When we're able to laugh about it, it's easier for us to accept it and not to fight it. And yes, when we do that, it's so much easier, isn't it?
Yes, for sure. And to be able to be playful with ourselves and to be kind to ourselves and being able to laugh at ourselves, you know, to have that freedom to not take ourselves too seriously is an important spiritual practice. And certainly in Taoism, many of their stories are sometimes absurd and certainly funny, because they know that, you know, laughter breaks us out of the normal rationality that dominates our lives. And to be able to have the ultimately compassion to ourselves that, you know, I am this incredibly complex, you know, organism, and trying to navigate a complex world, and to be compassionate that we're not always going to get it right. And also that there's part of us that overthinks and over worries, because it's, you know, our brains crave certainty, that they evolved to help us navigate the world. And so that is what they do best. They create thoughts to help us navigate the world. And so that isn't a problem. That isn't something that we need to fight. But also being compassionate to the fact that our consciousness cannot be always making the right decisions. But so, you know, doing our practices of gratitude and our other practices can help us create different perspectives on those thoughts. And then we can, you know, find out, okay, what is going to serve me in this moment? What is the more accurate thing that's going on? But being able to laugh and have fun with those thoughts suddenly completely changes the script, because suddenly, you know, your anxiety isn't something that, you know, makes you a messed up person or someone who's weak for being anxious, or, you know, whatever the sort of stresses that we are going through. But instead, it's just a genuinely natural part of the human experience. Like, it's not something to fight. It is something that, you know, has so many people go through. And so it isn't something that is particularly unique about any of us. It is part of how we evolved, is to have these kind of more negative experiences, which also, you know, serve a function, because they give us feedback and they can help us. You know, sometimes they will be correct. Like, there is something that needs, you know, the feeling motivates action or insight. And so does have its role to play, but often can be erroneous. And yeah, there was a bit I was going to talk about earlier. Yeah, I've forgotten what you said. Yes, Wu Wei, so non-forcing. So Yeah, there's a big concept in Taoism called Wu Wei, which literally translates as non-action, non-forcing, and it's beautiful words that you said, Georgian, because it's so much of what the Taoists talk about. Our normal ways of being, if we have a challenge in our lives, something stressful, is that okay? We think through, we get stressed, we think, okay, I'm going to have to think to be able to work out all potentialities to make sure that I'm fully prepared when something happens. You have a job interview, you practice for every single potential job interview question. You think you're prepared, and then you go in, they ask inevitably different questions. And because it's outside of your preparation, you freak out and you collapse into anxiety and you fail the interview. So that is one way of approaching difficult challenges in our lives. Another is to trust the body intelligence and to actually act from the present moment and to be spontaneous and playful. And so, in that job interview, it's about staying present and saying, okay, oh, that's a question I haven't thought about before. Can you ask me again? You know, stall and have some time. But otherwise, just say, this is what's coming up to me. And just being real in that moment and not over worrying that and trusting that immense capacity for intelligence that our bodies have. And the more I learn about non-human consciousnesses, to the best of our knowledge, that we are the only species that verbalize our thinking in words and in language. But that's not to say that monkeys don't have incredibly complex emotional lives, and they have hierarchies and they have culture. For example, there's groups of chimps in one area of the Congo that use tools to eat ants, and then there's others that don't, even though both have ants in the forest. And that's because one innovative chimp one day used a stick, and then everyone else copied him or her, and then that then was passed down the generations. And so that was a cultural innovation within that community. And so the point being is that all of that intelligence is a non-verbal intelligence. It's the intuitive intelligence of the body that can help navigate the world, help us navigate life. And so that intelligence is available to us too. And so it's again one of these practices of grounding us in the present moment and the power of that, rather than it just being I'll meditate and hope for the best. Instead, it's say, okay, let's see what comes up and trust that I can be spontaneous and act from the present as a powerful way of being, and rather than stress needing to be the first reaction.
Exactly. And I think your story is a great example of this. I'm thinking about how you got to Master Gu, and how you went about to ask for him. Actually, you weren't going to ask for him particularly, at least not at first. Tell us a little bit this part, because I think it's a perfect example about this, and also about Master Gu, who I think is actually embodying those exact things that you mentioned. The fact that he seems so playful and so natural as a human being.
Yes, yeah, playful and natural. Those are great words. The ones exactly that I would use. Yeah. So. Yes, it's you use the word it was brave to go across the world, and often I don't experience it as bravery, because it's looking back, I'm like, oh, how the hell did I get here, and all these things that happen. But often it is just seeing what comes up and moving with it, and so my the way that I got into Tai Chi and Taoism was through a series of very unexpected events and completely unplanned. And so I was stressed after finishing university and anxious, and I realized I needed to learn how to be kind to myself, because on the surface, nothing had really changed, no big life crises. I was just kind of working for myself and procrastinating in my room. And so I thought, if I can't handle this now, there's no way I'm going to be able to handle the big stuff. And so I thought I need something to kind of teach me about who I am and how I work. I had some vague idea that meditation could help, but I actually in university had watched some Kung Fu videos, and I wrote in my diary, you know, learn in a Kung Fu monastery, that would be fun. And so that kind of pipe dream turned into a trip, you know, like, okay, let's go and try and learn Kung Fu in a monastery. And I did some research. People may know the difference between Wudang and Shaolin. Like Shaolin's the most famous type of Kung Fu from China. You've got all the Shaolin monks doing crazy flips. Wudang is the kind of more internal and meditative brother of the Kung Fu world. And so I had this idea that meditation would be good for me. So I thought, hey, I'll try Wudang. Ironically, the fact that the philosophy was Taoism, which I knew very little about, was actually, I was like, well, Shaolin is Buddhist. Probably, you know, I know more about Buddhism. Well, I've heard of it. So maybe I should go there instead, which is, you know, ironic given how my life has turned out. But yeah, so I arrive at this amazing temple. So it's, you know, imagine a big courtyard, stone floor, and then this huge temple right in front of us with the kind of the curled edges of the roof. It's all wooden, beautiful, like red colors with big characters to signify the name of the temple. And then there's kind of this courtyard with wooden temples all around. And I go to the corner of the temple, the corner of the courtyard, and there's an old monk there sweeping the floor. And I go over to her and I say, speaking no Chinese, Kung Fu, Tai Chi. And she just waves her hand and says, Wabudong. I don't understand. Like, I don't understand what you're saying. I try this again a few times and yeah, literally nobody can understand what I'm talking about. And it turns out that although there are people who practice Tai Chi in the monastery, it's not a Kung Fu monastery by any means. And it's nothing like the films that I had imagined it would be. And so I quickly had to give up on that plan. And so I turned to plan B, which was to learn Kung Fu in a Kung Fu school. And so I, using Google Translate, I went to the locals and asked them to take me to a Kung Fu school. They, one of them volunteered as my guide, and we got on a bus going back down the mountain, which is always a bit terrifying when you don't speak the language and you spent weeks trying to get to the mountain and then someone's taking you back down the mountain without any instructions. But thankfully, she stopped the bus a few kilometers down and we got off, and there's a small break in the road and we step through that, and then we descend down a winding staircase below the tree line, and then this amazing valley is revealed that, you know, dives down, and then in the far distance is the top of the Wudang Mountains with the temples on top. And to the left is this small farmhouse. And we walk down, and my guide sees this young Chinese lady with a big Chinese hat on, having a snooze in the afternoon, rudely wakes her up, points to me, says something in Chinese, and this young lady introduces herself as Jingjing. And Jingjing, she does this beautiful slow movements, which I later find is Tai Chi, but I thought this was some weird form of Kung Fu. And then eventually the master comes of the school that I'm at. And it turns out that this isn't a Kung Fu school, but instead a Tai Chi school. And this master was Master Gu, who again, and this is, you know, just a ridiculous kind of bringing together of destiny, as I'll talk about in a sec. Master Gu is the only English speaking master in the whole of the Wudang Mountains. He studied English at university and is a Tai Chi master. And then I turn up, you know, completely by mistake, having wanting to learn Kung Fu and failing, and then somehow ending up in a Tai Chi school. And then I, you know, we meet. And so from then on, if Master Gu would have guests over for dinner, they'd be so, oh, so, you know, you're Master Gu student. I've heard you two met through Yuan Fen. And Yuan Fen in Chinese means destiny. And so for them, it's as tangible as meeting down the pub. It's like, oh, so you met through destiny. That's just for them as you know, real and as physical as any sort of meeting that we would normally imagine. And so, yeah, it did feel like destiny, because then that turned into, like Master Gu sharing this amazing culture on the YouTube channel with me. And then me being able to actually get, you know, a deep insight into this culture that many people wouldn't have got. Master Gu was, you know, in this very small Tai Chi school. He didn't do any promotion, and you know, eventually, because of the YouTube channel, he now has students and has recently refurbished, and, you know, his life is completely different and my life is completely different. And yeah, it all came from really not having a plan. So, and, you know, if I had pre-booked online some Kung Fu school, which there are some, you know, my life would be very different. And so that is something that I try and I think, which is why I have gone on some adventures in my time, is that I do try and leave that space for spontaneity and play and to see what the universe offers me and to take those opportunities, which ultimately, you know, has been very enriching for me. And so, yeah, I would say that if this is something that people can bring into their everyday ways of being, is just, you know, plans are important and we've got these great big fabulous brains to use them. It's not a problem to use them, but to still recognize the value of listening to the body, acting from the present moment and giving space for spontaneity and not being too attached to future outcomes, I think can be, you know, very nourishing and give people a lot in their lives.
Exactly. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but when you said destiny and the way you spoke about this, I got goosebumps.
Yes.
Like you said, it was something very tangible.
Yes.
And it's amazing. It's amazing. And when you think about it, like you said, your life has changed, his life has changed, and the lives of many people that have gotten to meet Master Gu. And I think it's so amazing that we have this technology and that we're able to experience what you experienced there. Because I was thinking how things were in the past. If you were a traveler, and you would have gone on this journey, how much time it would have taken for you to go, come back and write everything, and for us to somehow read it, to get to experience it somehow. And we would just experience Master Gu, for instance, from the things that you've written. But now, through the work that you've done there and through the technology that we have, we can do this in an instant. And yes. I think it's something amazing.
Yes, I so agree. And you know, the Taoists, they believe, you know, with the yin yang, that things are cyclical, you know, there isn't really change overall. But it does seem that, you know, humanity's increasing power, like we are connecting and raising our consciousness as a global species that inhabit a planet globally. So, like, say in the time of the Taoists 2,500 years ago, you know, there'd be absolutely no way that I could get to China. You know, I'd have to walk or take a horse and almost certainly be killed by bandits or whatever along the way. And, you know, the world was much, much smaller then. Like, for example, you know, you've got England and Wales, which are very close together. They're separated by a very small set of hills. And yet the Welsh and English language is vastly different. They don't have similar roots. And so the idea that it's just a small piddly set of hills that then can have such different languages, and then compare that to, you know, Britain versus China, which is on the other side of the planet, 12,000 kilometers away. You know, that is a completely separate world for whom the English and the Chinese have no idea that each other even exists. Not that they're just, you know, different or inferior or superior, that they don't even know that they existed. And the Chinese emperors of old, they believe that they ruled all under heaven. And that the even later on, the when the British came in colonial times and started, you know, causing trouble and being terrible colonialists, they were still known by the emperors as the West Sea Barbarians, and they were on the emperor's lands. They were just trespassing. And so this idea that the emperor, even then, while, you know, this kind of superior technology Britain colonialists coming in, was still on the emperor's land. And so, yeah, it's an interesting raising of consciousness, because we can really now see from the comfort of our own home, and the democratization of information, like with your, you know, you saw something, you know, that, you know, helped you and you wanted to share and to serve people through this podcast. Like the fact that people can do that now and to genuinely express their unique identity and people, you know, we all really appreciate seeing other people's lives and seeing how people think and what other people offer. And to have this technology now to really experience different lives, I do think gives me one reason for hope to that humanity can share this planet peacefully. Because, you know, for whatever the Chinese government does and whatever, you know, Donald Trump did or, you know, our governments, whatever, you know, the Chinese people are our people and there's lots of great people there. And that's true throughout the world. And, you know, the more information that we have of sharing between different cultures and showing our ultimate humanity, I think ultimately will be an important part of the journey for humanity to live peacefully.
Exactly. And I believe your film does exactly that. And it's helping people get together. And I love your ending and the motivation for it. So I really encourage our listeners to go on YouTube, type Journey to the East. And I will also include the link in the description of this episode so that it's easier for you. And like George said before going live at one point, it's designed to be enjoyed on a TV with some popcorn.
Yes.
It's a yes. Really good movie. And I think it's something really worth your time.
I appreciate that. And yeah, it's a movie experience for free on YouTube. So, you know, buckle up, get out on your TV, have some good speakers if you can, and enjoy it with friends if you can. And yeah, I hope people enjoy and get something out of it.
For sure. I'm sure they will. Thank you very much, George, for being here with us and for sharing all of these beautiful nuggets of wisdom and your beautiful view of the world. Thank you.
Thank you, Georgie. And it's been a pleasure. And thank you for everything that you do. And thank you to the listeners. And I wish you all the best on your own journeys of discovery.